Welcome to Revealing Men, conversations that pull back the curtain, revealing the inner lives of men. I'm Randy Flood, psychotherapist and director of the Men's Resource Center of West Michigan. Today we have Dr. Richard Robalt here to talk with us about men and aging, the challenges of both letting go and feeling left behind. Dr. Robalt is a board-certified psychoanalyst practicing in Grand Rapids. He's the author of two books on trauma, over 33 professional publications, as well as producing five films on issues related to social justice. Dr. Robalt has over 40 years of experience in the field and has treated men in various settings and various problems at various ages. Addicts in New York City, senior executives seeking to develop emotional intelligence, and violent adolescents in group therapy, to name a few. His first and most original contribution has been in introducing the idea of loving fight to fathers and their adolescent sons. He's a father of two grown sons and a grandfather to two more. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So you and I talked, and you wanted to start with a little story. Right. And so then we'll pick up from there. So go ahead and share that.
Okay.
And tell us a little bit about it before you get into it.
This is a flash fiction story, which means by definition, it's 1,000 words or less. This is specifically on what would have been my grandfather, who would have been my grandfather, I should say.
Yeah.
It's meaningful on a number of different levels, both in highlighting the intergenerational connections, grandfather to father to my sons, and the influence of two prominent women in my life that made all the difference.
Okay.
So how do I write to a grandfather who never lived? Dear Fred, I know you made my grandmother, Nana, my emotional lifeline, until she passed on, very happy. He was so handsome, and he chose me. But even in her devotion, she would say, he wasn't very ambitious. Nana moved to be with you, sacrificing wealth and family for your love. Your station in life was far more modest. I know you had two children. Much later, I came to learn you lost two twin girls at birth. You were Catholic, one died in utero, so only one had the honor of having a name for the few hours she survived. Did you stoically march on, or did something inside you break beyond repair? I have two children, and I know how precious their lives are to me, even as adults. My father, Raleigh, a fire pilot in the South Pacific, started his own law firm and was a man I went toe-to-toe with long enough to respect how he would let me go the distance with him. He never walked away. He never backed down. He also had a daughter, my dear Aunt Angie, who, bursting with fire, would step between me and my mother, whose iciness only Angie could melt. She loved her Cincinnati Reds, one nightly cigarette, Little King's beer, and her euchre games. Angie, as we knew her, walked and talked and dressed and did what she wanted. She was a feminist before there was such a term, which is all for the better, as a no-nonsense woman being considered as such would have turned her cheeks crimson. Fred, you didn't see any of this. I have a few details about your life. You were an accountant for a local chemical plant. You died by record. Were you 62, 63, or 64? Raleigh would have been 35, but he had no stories of you to pass on. Never did he even reference having a father. Does the age really matter? Not to you, not to me. You were always gone. I've seen one photograph of you. Fittingly, it was posed. The profile was a handsome man with a firm square jaw, thick gray hair, neatly parted, dressed in a suit fashionable at the time, I suspect. The look on your face was inscrutable, some bit of personality, but not enough to know the man, what he thought, what he felt, how he lived and breathed. I am told there's a missing photograph when Raleigh, while on leave, took you to the only baseball game the two of you attended together. I've never seen this photo, and I only learned of its existence at my current age of 71. I have a photograph of my father, also professionally taken. He's in his naval uniform, looking straight on into the camera, a half smile and half smirk. His white braided lieutenant's cap always catches my eye, slightly cocked to the side. Not by accident. My father was far too fastidious. No, the angle suggested confidence and daring. A man who flew through death and came out alive. I would say he came out more alive, but since he never talked about his war experiences, I can't be sure. Still, I believe it to be true. But where were you, Fred, in those years you lived? Where were you when your son was in the South Pacific? Did you listen to the nightly foreign correspondence or see any of the war newsreels? Why no photographs with friends or at ball games or cookouts? Why no stories or legacies? You died before I was born. I get that. Your son Raleigh died before my oldest was born. This means neither my son nor I had the opportunity to know our grandfathers. And the relationship should be the same, but they're not. Raleigh has a legacy. Raleigh left some piece of himself behind. My son heard stories, enough stories that in graduate school, he would visit Raleigh's gravesite to talk to him, seek his counsel. Some 40 years after his death, my children, their wives, and my grandchildren refer to Papa Raleigh. I would never think to consider you as Papa Fred. What I've heard over the years is that you were a good man. I've come to understand this is a tissue-thin excuse. You weren't in any obvious way bad, then therefore, in this binary thinking, you must have been good. Perhaps you were. Perhaps I'm being unfair. But being summed up as only a good man, entering my remaining years, scares the shit out of me. I want to be remembered as a man who could be kind and gentle, a man who went the extra distance in his work, who never gave up, who could be capricious, ill-tempered, and fierce, who brought his wife to orgasms of delight, who suffered panic attacks, and was so hyperactive that even with boatloads of Adderall, he'd still drive the most tolerant running from the room. Fred, I want to continue to be the man who is never satisfied, always wanting more to experience, more to love, more to fight against, more to fight for. I don't want to die of a heart attack sitting absently in my office chair. I want to be the man who dies on a sun-kissed morning while swimming across the lake with his life preserver stowed away beneath the dock at water's edge.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. So it's quite a story, and I can see why you wanted to share it relative to this subject of men and aging. You know, it's kind of like you're talking to your grandfather, and then the story concludes about your life and your legacy and you, what you're leaving.
Right.
Say more about that.
Well, I've only seen photographs of him. My father was so vibrant, so confident and ambitious in a healthy way that I modeled myself after him in many ways. And yet I think the two biggest influences really came from my grandmother and my aunt, Angie. they were there at times to guide me and offer some balance to the criticism I so routinely received from my mother. So this is indeed a personal story. Mm-hmm. My son, when he was in graduate school, would go, and when he had a difficult day, he would sit at my father's grave and essentially talk to him. My son never met him, but he always felt this connection to him, as did so many relatives in the family. So he really made an impact on my life. And it leads me to consider one of the differences that I think is so pronounced with men, and that is either acedia on one point or desire on the other. Acedia is a flattening out. It's an acceptance that it's good enough. It's fine.
Right.
Just go on. The analogy is often made to like living in a warm oven.
Okay.
You know, it's comfortable enough. Desire is where there's passion. There's the emotions, where there's zest for life, willingness to take chances. It is the difference of Fred dying in his office chair and my wanting to swim across the lake.
Right.
And I think that is a crucial distinction of how much desire to have in one's life and how much acedia, but acedia in a confined way that has to do with acceptance of what is good, not accepting the prospects of any decision in life focused only on avoiding danger.
Right.
Life is full of danger, and that's where the carefully titrated, that's where the excitement, exhilaration, and
right.
success comes from.
So you see, in specifically like with men and aging, there's particular challenges, and so what I'm hearing from you, you describe these two different ways, but there's just different ways in which men can age, and they can, some men become sweeter, some become more vulnerable, some become more open-hearted, and they're not buying into this more narrow version of masculinity. I just got to be tough and stoic. And then others, it sounds like you're saying that they kind of fade away, or they, mm-hmm. or maybe they get cantankerous and irritable because of lack of meaning and didn't fulfill their dreams or feeling left behind. Or so aging creates a lot of stress, meaning, and emotion for men.
True. And I think since you invited me on this podcast, I did some reading.
Okay.
Not surprisingly. I looked at really what is the normal course of aging on a general level.
Yeah.
And as men grow older, they grow more positive. That there's what they call a positivity effect,
mm-hmm.
where some of the higher intense emotions, like exhilaration or enthusiasm,
mm-hmm.
taper off, but there's this acceptance of calm, which is really related to differences in the brain structure and
right.
all of that. But I think that helps explain why people can be so puzzled by what they see as a change in behavior. One that's has been so dynamic in life, more sedate, and not in a acidic formulation, but more a sense of contentment. The world shrinks down by choice, and in smaller numbers, men can manage the world much better, but they're not routinely given to the same level of anger that younger men are. And I think that that too has a developmental aspect to it, that the anger, if it comes, is when the challenges facing any man are just too much and they wear down over time.
Right.
But initially, they're actually better able to manage conflict than younger adults. Mm. But when it's too prolonged,
right,
that's where it gives way and it can be irritation and anger.
Right. I often hear the phrase, he's softening with age.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like the other side of that is a hardening. And I think that sometimes young men, because their physicality mm-hmm. and you know, vitality allows them to kind of have more of that pose, that masculine, you know,
mm-hmm.
you must reckon with me. I'm mm-hmm. an imposing figure. And then as that physicality begins to fade in some ways or soften,
yeah,
then I wonder if men feel less pressure to have to perform masculinity in its rigid sense and be more human.
The as I was reading this, reading up on the literature, one of the things that struck me is that men can feel actually relieved about entering the final stages of life because the pressure of having to perform, to produce,
right,
of planning out the rest of life is lifted from them.
Hmm.
So I think, you know, with the younger men, roughly, we can say they're on the first mountain.
Right.
Older men are on the second mountain.
Right.
First mountain is the driven initiative, creating a life, making your mark in the world. After you've accomplished that, or much of it, what comes next? The focus switches from self-interest out. It's
right.
more of a giving away than
right.
a taking in.
Yeah.
And there's this ethos of compassion, of looking out for the greater good, of connecting more with the outside world. Of,
I think Erickson called it generativity, right?
Mm-hmm,
He's
mm-hmm.
I think it was stagnation versus mm-hmm. generativity.
Mm-hmm,
that you either mm-hmm. start shutting down and
right,
or you're right. feeling like you're giving and mm-hmm. and propagating and yeah.
Right. And I have an example of that from this morning. I co-lead a group we're calling the Rough Riders. and they're all men who have been very successful in life,
mm-hmm.
very powerful men, driven to success, have accomplished a great deal, who now approaching retirement feel alone. Like their social roles have been mm-hmm. diminished,
mm-hmm.
and they don't have the same kind of name recognition that they had. But one gentleman was saying this morning how much this group has meant to him, and it was then seconded by others, in having a place to talk about these things and having a place to talk about them openly without judgment immediately. And the recognition that we're all in this together and what needs to happen to feel like retirement is something that you finally have the time to do what you haven't had time to do before.
Right.
And often it shows up in social
right.
social issues and gun control, those kinds of things.
Right. And you're a film aficionado. And did you see about Schmidt with Jack Nicholson at all? That movie about he retired.
Mm-hmm.
He was a... you know, had a corner office, and he retired, and then his wife died like shortly after that, and he was a mess. He was isolated, and so that's when he got his Winnebago and started driving to visit his family and visit his kids, and then he started writing to this orphan boy, and he started kind of coming to life.
Okay.
You know? And I think that that's sometimes what some men might struggle with the advent of aging and death coming, you know, is have I wasted my time? And looking back and reflections, and I didn't hit the home run. I didn't, you know. Another movie that I loved that was a great men's movie is Nebraska. I don't know if you remember that one. It was like the guy that his son took him all the way across the state of Nebraska to claim his sweepstakes win, and he knew it was a sham. But his dad needed to have a dream, needed to have something that gave him a reason to get up.
Right. It's about purpose.
Yeah.
It's about living with purpose. It's about retiring with purpose. I don't think we ever lose that if we're inquisitive about life and we want to develop our resources as far as we can go. So, again, with this Rough Rider group, men haven't stopped learning. They stopped working in the job that they had, but they haven't stopped learning, and they're moving through. So to go back to the question, what can be done? That was a question that came up this morning as well in response to you-know-who that operates, lives in the White House. But it's like, what can be done? It's easy to go helpless about that.
Yeah.
Given the extremes to which this president will go. But there are things that can be done. Gathering neighbors, gathering friends to talk about, to share a vision for the future. Mm. In supporting a particular cause, that trying to handle all causes is just too much.
Right.
And it's dissipating one's strength. Whereas focusing on a cause, be it gun control, environment, narrows it, and it gives a sense, again, of purpose, of direction, of camaraderie, which is so important at these advanced years. So,
yeah. I personally find, you know, obviously not retiring quite yet, but I, you know, as being a new grandfather, and sometimes, and I work from home Mondays and Fridays, and I'm writing reports and such, and I find myself just like, gosh, I got to figure out just a day to be with my granddaughter. Only, I'm toggling out of her life quite a bit because she lives close by, but, you know, as a father, I was like, ready to go out into the workforce and just ready to tackle the world. And now I feel that energy of, you know, just wanting to slow things down and having more time for relationships. And I think that's one of the beauties of aging, is recognizing the importance of relationships.
Mm-hmm. And it's also about loving. I wrote down this quote by W.H. Auden. Love your crooked neighbor with all your crooked heart. I think that sums up things well. If we can accept and love some of the failings as well as the successes, then we're living in a more balanced world and we're likely to have a more resilient relationship.
Right. Yeah. So aging, as we wind down, is definitely not for the weak and the, it's definitely a courageous, to do it well takes courage, takes a lot of internal strength, and takes a lot of love to be able to.
Takes a lot of love, and it also takes avoiding what Hemingway called those dirty, easy labels, that it's easy to label somebody and therefore dismiss them more easily than do the tough work of really looking at what is true and what is not.
Right.
And what values do you wish to uphold? Where do you wish to stand in the world?
Right.
I want to stand on the edge of it.
Right. I could tell that in the story that you opened up. Well, you have my admiration. I will follow your lead.
No, thank you. Thank you. I've enjoyed this.
Thanks for coming in and talking with me.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Revealing Men. If you're looking for more information about counseling, coaching, and consultative services, please visit the Men's Resource Center of West Michigan online at menscenter.org. Also, feel free to contact us on our website if you have questions about this segment, ideas for a topic, or would like to be a guest on the Revealing Men podcast. Please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a rating so others can find us. Be well and have a great day.